welcome everyone to our final presentation in the series of Getting to Know Your AULs. Thank you everyone for coming, and we will be here for as long as it takes to get to the bottom of what Lee does. But we've invited Lee Cartmill, who's the AUL for Administrative Services. Is that there?
That's correct.
Come and speak to us. And Ann Kenny, who may or may not be speaking as well.
Oh, she's speaking. No worry.
Good. Oh, good. That's good. And we are poised to learn more about what they do. And if nothing else, we can talk about Lee's basketball career.
There you go.
That. So really I'm going to turn it over to you guys and do a presentation, and everybody knows the drill at this point.
Okay.
We'll do the presentation, and then we'll just have a chat.
Perfect.
Sounds good. So we discussed on the way up who would go first, and I decided that since Ann's job is much more interesting than mine, that we would save the best for last. So I'll lead it off. I listened to a couple of the earlier sessions, and it sounded like there was no really set format. Everybody sort of did their own thing, and I did not bring pictures. So I'll just talk a little bit about some of my background, and then what I do here with the library. So as of next Wednesday, which is the 30th of January, I will have been at Cornell for 37 years, and as we were talking, I graduated from Middlebury College, and then I came to Cornell and got my MBA here immediately following that, and although I am an AUL, I do not hold an academic position. I'm not a librarian. My advanced degree is an
MBA. You played one, though.
I have the title. Just full disclosure here on that. Then after I got my degree here at Cornell, I went into the business world for 2 or 3 years, and then came back in 1976 into what is now the Division of Financial Affairs at Cornell, and spent, you know, the first almost half of my career there, and had responsibility for things like the accounting department, the payroll department, the annual financial report, and, you know, exciting stuff like that. And then decided it was time for a change, and I came to the library in 1992, and I figured, you know, that might be good for 5 years or so, and then we'll find something else to do. And needless to say, after almost, I guess, 20 years now, I'm still here, and it's not the same old library it was 20 years ago, which is what has kept my interest, and it's been a great place to work. So doesn't seem like 37 years, but time does fly when you're having fun. So my responsibilities as, so what falls under administrative services? Let me first of all say, primarily I'm supporting university library-wide things on a higher level. Operationally, it's mostly the endowed libraries. Of course, the contract college libraries and hotel, you know, do their finance and budget and facilities and things sort of in conjunction with the college. That all will probably change in some areas, and we can talk a little bit about that. But my responsibilities are primarily for the finance and budget area. That's Tammy Magnus and her group. The facilities group, which is Phil Coons, and that includes the shipping room operation, which makes the deliveries to all the libraries around campus. I have human resources. Lindsay Prignon is our director, with some assistance with from Sandy Dimitri, who is also the director of Human Resources for the College of Human Ecology. And then I have Ed Weissman reports to me. You all know Ed. And the 201 administrative group led by Michelle Eastman and Rachel and Angie report into me as well. So it's about 20, 25 people, something like that. And so, you know, I spend my time on those kinds of things. I help negotiate contracts, like with Google or Microsoft for digitization. I do financial analysis and reporting. I get involved with renovation projects. The fifth floor and second floor of Olin, that took a lot of time. Obviously, I'm doing this in conjunction with lots of people. Human resources, we're making, human resource covers a lot. I'm not going to go into it all here, but when we get to things like determining SIP programs and how we're going to structure those, training and so forth, I work with Lindsay and her predecessors on those kinds of things. I play a support role. I consider a large part of my job is supporting all the other AULs and AN for any needs they have, whether it's financial, budget, anything logistical, dealing with administrative matters. A lot of my time currently is spent with the new university budget model, which will be coming into play next fiscal year. I spend a lot of time, or a fair amount of time, working with my colleagues in the other colleges. Each college has a position that's similar to mine. They're often associate dean type positions, but they're administrative officers. They're also called college officers. We're all called college officers, although obviously we're not a college. So I work with them on things that involve the library, and will be working with them even more closely as we put a new budget model into place. Sort of the library's contact with the central administrative offices for those areas, mm-hmm. finance, budget, human resources, and facilities. So whatever, I spend time dealing with those units quite a bit, and working on policy issues that come up from them that we have to turn around and implement here in the library. That's Too Cool. I play a big role in Too Cool, particularly phase one when we had a lot of financial reporting and so forth. Whatever Ann needs, I try and meet her needs as best I can. So it's a lot of fun. It's not dull by any means. There's a lot going on, and Ed Weissman gets involved with grant administration. He helps out with grants. That's part of our responsibility, and Tammy administers them. I work some with Jennifer Sawyer on fundraising issues and provide her with information she may need, help decide where gifts go, what funds we want to use to support various programmatic things that come along. So, in a short rundown, that I think pretty much covers most of my responsibilities. So now we can hear the fun stuff.
Okay, well, I think at the risk of repeating things, I've been here since 27 years. From last week, January 8th was my first day of starting, working in the preservation program, which I did until about 2000, and then went into administration first as the, there were so many reorgs going on. First is the Assistant University Librarian for Instruction, Research, and Information Services, IRIS. Then became an associate AUL, and then a senior AUL. And then everybody left the ship. Sarah went off, and a number of the other AULs, and so I was the last one standing, and became the university librarian. And I'm about to enter my second term. July will be the beginning of my next five-year term. I went to high school in Alaska. My athletic credentials are backstroke state champ of Alaska. There were only six of us who did backstroke. I was the winner. That's because Barbara Lindemuth did the freestyle. She was really good. But I then went to Duke as an undergraduate because I didn't look at anything north of the Mason-Dixon line. I was cold enough. And then got a master's in history, played with the idea of going on into history as a teacher, and decided against that. I won a fellowship to work on a collection in the archives back in St. Louis, and fell in love with the processing and the whole thing of the guts of history. And so then I got an MLS degree, and then moved here for love in 1986, and became employed by Cornell in 1987, January. I thought I'd sort of talk a little bit about how I spend my spare time. A lot of it is spent with Lee. We do an awful lot of thinking through budgetary issues, particularly over the last 3 to 4 years, which haven't been my favorite years in terms of budget cuts. My counterparts, while there are the college officers group that Lee is a member of, I sit in on the Dean's Council, which is the deans of all the schools and colleges, plus the university librarian. And we meet with the provost every Tuesday morning, or most Tuesday mornings. And there's a whole range of things that we'll work through, noodle through. It's wonderful to be at the table looking at academic-related issues. So I see the deans as my peer group within the university I work closely with, although I certainly work with the Faculty Senate Committee, which meets monthly, and the Student Library Advisory Council, which also meets monthly, and then there's an external advisory group. I spend probably a quarter to a third of my time these days in fundraising and friend-raising activities, working with Jennifer Sawyer, as Lee pointed out. And I'm happy to actually report on some of our fundraising activities. We have in our overall campaign, which is to raise $60 million by the end of 2015, we are at about $43 million, so around 72% of our goal. I think that's really good. And for last year, for fiscal 13, which will end in July, we have raised over $4 million, which is 82% of our goal. In terms of the campaign, and then there's also annual fund giving. And our annual fund, actually we're second only to Student and Academic Services in terms of the amount we've raised. We're at 71% of our goal, and that's at on $500,000. We continue to increase the number of donors also. We're at close to 700 donors here. Although I did look at the number of donors, which is very healthy, but the average gift size of donors to the library, and it's about a little over $500 per donor. So that compared to something like hotel administration, which is $1,400, or that pesky lab of ornithology just mints money. They're at almost $1,300. And then the law school, some of the professional schools. But we're sort of right in the middle of the pack. And one of my goals with Jennifer this coming year is to continue to increase the number of donors, but also challenge it up to maybe an average of $750. So try to increase it by 50% per giving. I'm also, in terms of fundraising, I think maybe you've heard about the library salons that we've been holding across the country, principally in New York City, but Jennifer and I will be going to Seattle. We'll be holding our salon at Amazon headquarters. Beth Anderson, who is on our Our advisory council is the sort of senior VP for Audible, and so Audible was taken over by Amazon. So that'll be a fun meeting, and then we'll also meet in the LA region and do two salons, but also meet with donors, prospective donors. So we do 2 to 3 to 4 of those a year. And then a lot of my energy this year, this fiscal year, is to focus on those 40 potentially high donor individuals who have some interest in the library. So I've done almost 20 of those visits, and I have another 20 to go. And I'm cautiously optimistic that those will reap great benefits. So that's very much on my mind. I'm also I work closely with all of the AULs. Lee probably the most, but I certainly meet with every one of the AULs on a biweekly basis and go through things. And then I want to emphasize the really, while we don't all think alike on the library executive group, I do see it as the key decision-making body within the library system. And it is great to have very different perspectives at the table, but we end up usually coming to some kind of consensus around the approach we'll be taking. And then I just met earlier today with the Managers Council, which is a SCIP group to focus on the 5 key areas moving forward for the library. An engaged, innovative staff culture, the New York Tech campus. John Saylor's coordinating a group on defining the library services and resources for that. Looking at sort of rationalizing and making more efficient and effective our IT infrastructure. Greater collaborations. I think that having a wonderful research library is critical, but our future really does lie in deep collaborative arrangements, not just in this country, but around the world. I've spent a good bit of time in Asia developing some of those relationships as well. And I'm really pleased that a number of us have been asked by the Soros Open Society to go and develop a program for higher education support in terms of an electronic library for Burma. So we'll be going in February to look at what it's gonna take to do that. I think it's a real testament to the strength of Cornell as a place that is seen as a leading light. The other group that I interact a lot with are my peers within the research library profession. I don't go to many professional organizations meetings. I kind of turn into a mouth breather at ALA. It's just too many librarians there. But I am strongly committed to the Association of Research Libraries, which is the directors of the top 126 ARLs within the United States and Canada. And Cornell is within that sort of top 10, barely hanging on to the top 10. And in addition, I bring together a group of what I call the like-minded research library directors, and we meet a couple of times a year. It's a handful of library directors that I feel have both the energy and the vision and the wherewithal to do collaborative thinking around key issues. So we met in Minnesota a month or two ago, and we're focusing right now on what's it going to take to really connect digital repository development with print repository and what's the connection between that, that these things really have to be done on a major scale. It's not enough for Columbia and Cornell to collaborate, but in fact you need a whole network of these arrangements around the country. And we've also focused on digital preservation related issues, data management and the like. So that's kind of how I spend my time.
Well, so now, Sally and I each have dueling microphones.
Da-na-na-na-na-na.
If you have a question, raise your hand. Your hand is to you. Because in case I forgot to remind everyone, we are being recorded. All right.
Wonderful. Lee, you mentioned the new university budget model, and I would love to hear your perspective, not so much on the nuts and bolts, but what does it tell us about our university that budget model is being changed? I mean, how does the provost talk about it? What do you see? How does it change for the library? What does it mean for us, say, next year, but also 5 years from now?
I think that's a question that Ann and I can both address different aspects of, right? We talked about it a little bit at the Managers Council meeting this morning. So the biggest change from an administrative point of view is the fact that the contract colleges and hotel, who now receive and manage their budgets through their respective colleges, those budgets and responsibilities will now all be concentrated under Ann's area of responsibility, along with all the endowed college libraries as well. So it's a big change administratively in how the libraries will be managed. And we're just now, like this week, going to start diving down into some of the details to figure out what that really means. And I need to meet with all the contract college college officers and hotel. I have obviously some ideas about what needs to happen, but we're at the point now where we really need to dive down into the details, understand what are the implications, for example, of Lindsay and the HR group taking responsibility for all the personnel transactions for Mann and Catherwood and Vet and hotel. We know the numbers say that it's about 23% more people than what she currently manages. So what are the implications for that? Same thing for budget purposes. So that's a big change both administratively but also financially, because the colleges now, all the colleges, including the endowed colleges, and this is new for them because they never paid directly for library services before, and they will now be doing so. So there will be a more attention, I think it's fair to say, paid by the endowed colleges and deans, more interest in their libraries than they currently have under the existing model, because it's sort of a free good for them. So basically, without getting into a whole lot of detail, all the operating costs of all the libraries on campus, including Geneva, not including the medical college, will be pooled together, and they will be distributed to the colleges, all the colleges, on the basis of the percentage of faculty, students, and I think they call them other academics, which are like research associates and, mm-hmm. and so forth. And then it'll be our task to continue to work closely, even more so with the colleges, and this will, you know, Ann can chime in on this, to make sure their needs are being met. We continue to incent them to support their libraries, give them the services that they need and you know should have for their constituencies. So, supposedly the new model is supposed to be in place by July 1st of this year. The provost has said that there'll be parts of it that are in place. It'll probably take another year to fully implement everything. I think that probably is true for the library. I'm not sure we're going to have everything in place that we can flip a switch on July 1st, but we'll be a long ways towards ultimately doing that. The provost has said that there will be a one-year grace period, if you will, that the resources in the new model don't match up, read expenditures exceed revenues. To the degree that happens, he will make everybody whole for a year so that, you know, the hard decisions, if you will, about how these deficits under the new model are really going to be handled, I think is going to be pushed out over the course of the next year. A lot of work to be done, and I think, and Ann, maybe you want to chime in, a lot of it's going to be our relations, different types of relationships with the colleges and the deans over library services, and I think that's going to be a big change.
Right. I think that the new budget model is disruptive in lots of different areas. We're a relatively small piece of the puzzle, although it's kind of an obvious one because we've fallen under the cost allocation method, CAM charges that are pushed out to each of the schools and colleges. And with this new model, the number of faculty and related academics plus the number of students is really a loose proxy for the actual costs associated with each one of the libraries that are under the purview of the university. So if, and mathematically, it, you know, it's the same. You know, if you have a lot of faculty and a lot of students, your bill is going to be bigger. If you have fewer of them, your bill is going to be smaller. So it's a piece of the overall budget. At the same time, the full costs of running a library system are going to be made apparent. So, you know, if we have a budget that has been roughly about $40 million, all of a sudden the facilities costs and other costs associated with that are added on to that. So you have a 20% increase in the budget itself, which is a sticker shock, not only for us, but a sticker shock for the respective schools and colleges. And they also are getting sticker shocks around, say, the facilities that they manage that are outside of what the library represents. So I think that the provost has been pretty steady in his vision around moving forward toward a unified budget that is transparent around the expenses and pushing out the kinds of revenues directly to the respective deans and academic and administrative units, as well as the charges that used to be, quote, hidden kinds of, you know, these free, not so free public goods. Lee mentioned that we will, our relationship with deans and the faculty and students in the respective schools and colleges will be even more important than they have been. And that in addition to maybe having a memorandum of understanding with each of those deans around the services and expectations, we'll be doing sort of an annual report card to those deans to talk about what kinds of services, not simply, say, in the case of CALS and Human Ecology, what Mann Library has been doing for them, but what the full university library has done for them in that in this new relationship. So I think we want to emphasize the specialness of those the correspondence of school and library where it exists, but also to broaden it to encompass a much wider set of arrangements that are supportive. All to be determined. It's conceptually strong at this point.
Yeah, it hasn't. The numbers aren't final yet. You know, we enter our budget planning process here in the next month, and we still don't know what kind of numbers we're working with. The trustees have to approve the planning parameters next month. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, you know, what will the size of the salary improvement program be, and that'll drive certain things. The numbers are preliminary. What we've been seeing is based on fiscal year 12 budget information, some on fiscal year 13 budget information. The space inventory hasn't been finalized yet. Sometime any day now, we're supposed to be getting the latest version. And so we've got to carefully look at that and make sure, for example, all the space associated with Mann Library is properly identified. Same way with all the libraries, because those the cost associated with those spaces will come to the library.
Right.
And we will, since we have no revenue source, we're an allocated operation. Those costs are going to go right back out to the colleges. So the colleges have a vested interest to make sure those numbers are correct, because they're going to benefit from not having to pay the direct costs of that space out of their budgets. But on the other hand, they're going to get their proportionate right. share of the total facilities costs right. across the system. So there's a lot of that sort of stuff that still has to be done.
Right.
And that's why I don't think that, and I think the provost recognizes it, that this isn't going to be in concrete on July 1st of this mm-hmm. year. But a lot of the principals will be, and the colleges will be yeah. held harmless from a bottom line perspective.
I'm not sure your metaphor for her in concrete is a good one. You know, sleeping with the fishes or something. You got a concrete boot.
If it's okay, I'm probably going to ask you to engage in some completely irresponsible speculation about this. So, gearing up to getting MOAs, memorandums of agreement with deans and so forth, do you think we're high enough on the radar that there's going to be a certain amount of looking over the fence at other schools and saying, oh, well, they're paying this much and they're getting A, B, and C. We're paying about the same or more and we're not getting C. Mm-hmm. Or, and if you do think that that's going to be something that's on the horizon, how, if you're, you know, can talk about it, how is that sort of situation, how are you looking to resolve that sort of
yeah,
situation?
Yeah, yeah. It's certainly very much on our minds, because as I said, the costs of running Mann Library or ILR Library is very loosely related to the number of faculty and students at that school or college. It is really important that we see the library's budget as one budget. I have stated over and over to the provost, I cannot negotiate with every dean about how much they're willing to put into the collections, issues around staffing, the level of staffing, salaries, the ratio of X, Y, or Z. I would be spending all of my time negotiating and dealing with second guessing. As the deans and the budget officers, college officers, looked at proxies for how to distribute costs, there were a number of different models that could have been used. You could have thrown staff in there as well. You could have thrown amount of research resources that are generated and stuff. And they all tended to agree that the faculty, broadly defined, and students was the determinant for library resources. So it would be a nightmare, and I'd actually start looking for another job. So if any of you have openings with someone who has no experience, I'm your person.
I think the thing to keep in mind is, although it's the big thing for the library, obviously, it's one of many things that the deans are looking at. And, distribution of tuition revenues, for example. What percentage does the enrolling college keep and as opposed to the teaching college? And those kinds of things that have a lot bigger impact numbers-wise than the library. So we're one of lots of different components of this model, and what the provost has tried to do is to emphasize that it's really about the bottom line, right? You might win on function A, but lose a little bit on function B compared to what you're paying now. But overall, what's the bottom line? That's easier said than done. So I think. I think when a college, and we're talking the ones that currently, the contract and hotel, which specifically fund those libraries, look at what they're paying now and look at what they're paying in the new model, there's going to be a difference. And I think in some cases, it'll be more than what they're paying now. And so it's natural that those you know, there's an inclination to ask why, what are we getting for that? So I think we've got to, as Ann says, we've got to keep emphasizing the wholeness, the one library system. We've got to keep hoping that they'll focus on the bottom line and not pull the library out specifically, but the numbers will be there. It's transparent. Everybody's going to know. So it's a challenge. I think that's a big challenge for us in dealing with my colleagues, dealing with Ann's colleagues. We don't want to discourage specific investments in those libraries. We want to continue to have the deans and the fundraisers raise money specifically for a library. Mm-hmm. That could be in addition to the part that gets distributed. It's a good question, though. It's on our radar for sure.
Definitely.
Glia.
So what do you each think are the benefits of this, from your perspective, for the library, of this new budget model approach?
I'll let Ann go first.
A better sense of the whole, a better sense of knowing exactly what resources we have in terms of planning. The ability to make some tough decisions that will be reverberate throughout the system. I'm thinking, so let's say there's a new need that rises up. Data curation, which is an area where we really need to continue to invest. It is something that the library as a whole will invest in. And that what is done has to be able to support all of the disciplines. So, you know, if it may come out of hard science, but what are the ramifications for the social sciences and for the humanities? Collection building, you know, the library one-to-one correspondence of collections and needs, you know, has really gone by the wayside, particularly as we move more into the digital realm, where the primary, secondary users of content are strange and wonderful new permutations, particularly as we think about interdisciplinary work. Just thinking about life sciences, the endowed side is also interested in life sciences, although CALS is the life science school at Cornell. And there are complementary library resources that go in to support the budget that CALS has for life sciences. That makes total sense to me.
I think there's an advantage from a, I guess I call it an advocacy point of view. Because I think the colleges in some cases don't necessarily understand or maybe appreciate everything we do, and particularly in the environment we've been in lately where everybody's been cutting. I think, you know, those decisions are to some degree not informed in the way you'd like them to be informed. They're more of a total financial situation. So I think there's an opportunity for us to speak perhaps at the dean level to reinforce the importance of the library and try and buffer some of that, which the contract libraries have sort of been on their own dealing with the dean or the college officer. So I think that's a big plus for us that I think we get out of it. I think it provides flexibility, as Ann suggested. It takes down some some barriers and financial barriers, and allows us to perhaps more efficiently allocate some resources without regards to, you know, well, that's a state budget issue and we really can't you know, touch that. I think it gives the state funded libraries an opportunity to come to someone other than the college who's not very receptive in these days to perhaps help support different initiatives. We have some central money like the deans do, and we know we're going to spend it on libraries. The dean's going to spend it on a whole bunch of different things.
Like the biodiversity heritage thing would be an example.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there are some definite advantages.
I think
us.
It was asked at the MC meeting today about whether, you know, as we have one library budget, what happens with staff who are on the endowed and on the state side. And I think we'll continue to see those different endowed and state appointments. But they also may not be as directly correlated with, oh, if I'm a state employee, I'm working at ILR, or I'm working at VET, or I'm working at Mann Library.
Right.
In fact, they may be working at a number of the different libraries. Similarly, endowed folks may be working at these various libraries. So. We'll have, I think, more flexibility around that.
Yeah.
And we really like the state because of we don't pay bennies.
Yeah. There's an obligation on the part of Cornell to protect the state funding, mm-hmm. so that we have to be careful that we're not taking state resources and spending less on state programs or state colleges than is currently directly being spent by those. So we have to have metrics in place. We've got to be able to measure that there's not a shift in resources one way or another. So it gets a little complicated, but it's important to protect our relationship with the state of New York that we can do that.
I'd say that, you know, there'll be a yours, mine, and ours, but the ours gets bigger.
Yeah.
In terms of budgetary issues.
Yeah.
I have a question. Nobody else mine.
Okay.
I wondered what, and I guess it's primarily for Andrew. Well, in terms of, you talked a little bit about collaborations being central to the way we move forward. Do you see anything in terms of particular relationships that are developing that, on the horizon, or these are just in general it'd be good to develop the kind of relationships like we have with Columbia?
Yeah. Well, we have been funded by Mellon for the second phase of Too Cool, and that will move toward an integrated technical service operation between the two campuses, which I think will allow us to expand our capacity and capabilities, particularly in dealing with matters that research libraries really care about. Squiggle languages, beyond the sort of traditional kind of cataloging, you know, better metadata service capabilities, those sorts of things, where there's been a great bit of redundancy at each of these places. We now see this as a possibility for a win-win for both Cornell and Columbia. My hope is that Borrow Direct, which has worked extremely well in terms of sharing collections, could get its act together around shared collections. Again, there's an awful lot of redundancy around the kinds of materials we all buy. A bit of redundancy is critical, but it doesn't have to be so high. If we can see it as a program in which our end game is to ensure that all faculty and staff within our relationships have access to the absolutely critical resources they need, then secondarily, it matters where it is and how quickly I can get it.
And do you think would you say that most partners, my model that keeps coming, jumping into my mind with collaborations is Congress now, and it's like, that's not a very collaborative model.
No, it certainly isn't.
You know, like there are, but does it seem like, would you say in general, like the partners in Borrow Direct would all agree in the ways that Republicans and Democrats don't about the end? Ideologically, philosophically, is it?
I think you'll find that they're getting closer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Borough Direct has relatively small schools in it. You know, Brown and Dartmouth are fairly small, and then you've got the behemoths, Harvard and Yale, and Princeton to some degree, and then you've got this sort of middle group of Penn and Cornell and Columbia. I'm sure I'm missing somebody in there. But there is more of a sense that they can't do it all by themselves. Even Harvard recognizes they can't do it all by themselves. They joined Borrow Direct, and it's sort of how do you push that that trajectory into areas that seem like no-brainers to me. And you ought to permeate the whole university system. For instance, in IT, basic administrative IT services, you know, those ought to not only use the same kind of programs, software, but there ought to be much more of sharing of division of labor and expertise and that sort of thing than there is now. So I do see the library as, you know, the pre and post competitive collaboration is where we need to figure out how we do things better together than separately. But it's the last couple of years that we've seen more of the swing toward that kind of thinking. And it, you know, it still just strikes me, well, if I shared this with you, you might know it. Well, yeah. Right. I mean, it doesn't mean that your brain gets empty. I mean, right. What's the deal here? It's just a very different mindset. I have a question for this group. Have you found these sessions on getting to know your AULs? I don't know if you've come to all of them. You know, this very much came out of the staff engagement kind of thing. What the heck do those people do all day? Are there other ways to build on this year of thank you, Library Forum, for taking this on? Are there issues you'd like to see me or the AULs or LEG collectively noodle over? You know, we're looking at ways, and we're just trying out all sorts of new ways of making that communication more transparent across the library system. Leah?
Thank you. So you mentioned that LEG was, you consider LEG the primary decision-making group in the library system. So it might be interesting, you know, and you guys can noodle over this however you feel like it makes sense, but to have a better sense from that group of their holistic planning process, you know, that each of them are representing sort of maybe a more functional area of the library, and how what happens when y'all sit around the table and come together. And do you say, look at a problem and say, oh, there, you know, there's an IT piece and there's a public services piece and there's a scholarship piece or whatever the ways you might divvy it up. So just kind of, that might be interesting thing for us to understand a little bit better.
I think we're also grappling with that a little bit. So let's say data curation. Dean has kind of been the point person maybe with data curation. But his portfolio really is the IT side of things. And that is too simplistic of a perspective on a really major issue, which has sort of what kinds of services, what kinds of collaborations, what kind of training, what kind of resource support, how are we going to do analysis of the feedback of what, you know, the effectiveness of what we do. It's a shared thing. The way we've divvied our portfolios up, it's more take an issue and then what are the requisite pieces and how do we collaborate, rather than saying you're in charge of that and you're in charge of that and, you know, go forward and be fruitful. So I'm not sure that our process of championing things is as fully aligned with the way we've identified the responsibilities. So that's an area that we've just been talking about recently. I also think in the less with less has not only how do you make your life more bearable, but also how do you develop some headroom for taking on new challenges and being able to think creatively about the future. It's going to require some changes in the way we go about doing our work. And, you know, we've had this sort of library-wide discussion and functional discussion, and now it has to come back to leg to think collectively together around the good of the order moving forward. So I hope we make more transparent to you that process of what comes out. It's very rare that I will say, forget it, this is what I'm going to do. Right?
It's rare, but it does happen on occasion. Which it should. She's the boss.
I would say, too, that we've gotten feedback from more than one person that the fact that these sessions were helpful, but also that they were recorded, because a lot of people either can't
read
it or they weren't in it. But they've enjoyed being able to kind of get to know all of you just through the audio.
Yeah.
In a forum that it's more informal.
Yeah.
You know, you talk a little bit about where you come from. I didn't know you guys.
You didn't know she was state champ, did you?
No. You were on the basketball team. That's little things, but I mean, that's in terms of developing a community, if we're all in this together,
right.
I think those things are important. Yeah. So. Bowling, of course, is the other one.
Bowling, yeah. Who is the champ in bowling?
Jill. No, I only turn to her because she's organizing bowling.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You know, Joan Brink is a really good bowler.
We're going to find out. We're going to have to see you on bowling match.
Yeah.
We're going to find
Maybe
out.
Maybe you should play this.
We're going to find out.
Does everybody?
I think Ed Weissman is being a supreme bowler.
I think he's probably good at the kibitzing part of the bowling. And the beer drinking. Have you, talked about Wendy Luger's coming? I think that's also part of that. How have they addressed many of the issues that we're kind of moving forward? And I think she'll be good. But we're also taking advantage of her being here because the Faculty Senate is running a forum in the afternoon of Valentine's Day on the future of research libraries writ large, not just, you know, what the heck is Cornell Library up to. And so she's the president of the Association of Research Libraries. She'll be speaking, and also Cliff Lynch from he's the head of the Coalition for Networked Information. And then Narissa Russell, who chairs the faculty board. And then I will also be on a reactor panel. So I think that's great. I think that research libraries are in a tough patch for a decade, that their self-evident role within the academy is not as clear-cut as we would like. I do firmly believe we'll come through this hard transition, and then we will come back to a new period of renaissance of what research libraries play within the research university. But just our luck, we're in the middle of the transition. The library forum? And the thing on the faculty thing will come out really quickly, too. It will be, although I have been, it's being recorded. Faculty will be encouraged to sit up front.
Oh, I don't mind hiding.
It'll be in Milstein Hall, so there should be enough room.
And there'll be announcements.
There are, you know, a handful of university librarians out there that I just hold way up there on the pedestal, and Wendy is certainly one of them. So I'm really pleased she's coming. She is very cool.
No question. this is probably more for you, Em, but being university librarian, do you ever look back and say, wow, I miss doing X, Y, Z when I was, and what are those things, and how do you, I guess, deal with that, being university librarian?
Yeah.
We were joking the other day. just as a preface, which may or may not be good, but administration isn't a whole lot of fun, right? I mean that's, you know, administration is administration, and it's not what we were trained to do necessarily. It's stuff we sort of acquired as we went along through our career. So, go ahead, tell them.
Well, with that set up, I was mentioning it to the new staff this morning, and some of you were at that. It was great. It was a full room, which has been a while since I've had a full room of new staff, so high score for that. And, you know, I just loved their enthusiasm and interest and their sense of being very pleased at being at Cornell. So that was gratifying. But I did say to them, the part of my career that was the most rewarding was when I was doing research on digital imaging for libraries and archives, and, you know, working on defining standards. I spent a lot of time at the Fine Arts Library looking at type fonts, and, you know, just, and then doing the books and the workshops and stuff like that. And I just couldn't believe they paid me every day to come to work. And now I know why they pay me every day to come to work. But no, they're actually, I do despair a little bit about how do we make administration something that people are going to want to do. That it's almost like people going into politics.
Yeah.
You know, only the crooks go into politics. Please stay out, and we get the good folks to do it. Working with wonderful colleagues makes a lot of it all worthwhile. And, you know, if I were the librarian in 1990, I'd be kind of bored, because, you know, you just do the same old stuff and just keep doing it well. Nowadays, it's like, oh my God, what are we going to do tomorrow? You know, and how do you make the best educated guess you can in thinking of, I've got to move here because in 3 years, I've got to be there. And so that part of it is pretty, next to Sudoku, it's really pretty much fun. God, I wish I'd known that there was going to be a fiscal cliff there. yeah, that was really tough.
Yeah, I think it's a tough time to be an administrator now, mm-hmm. Because of the environment we're in. I don't, you know, it's not a lot of fun, you know, worrying about how we cut back and you know, you're making decisions that, you know, are impacting individuals, and that's hard to do when you're doing it with a broad brush look at things. But I don't know. It's one of the what could I have done differently? I don't. You know, I didn't come into this to be a library administrator, but just stuff sort of happened. You know, and you pick up things as you go along, and every experience sort of feeds into who you are and how you operate and how you manage. And I love my job. I think it's challenging. There's an opportunity to make a real difference and make this a better place for people, staff, users, everybody. So I mean, there's a lot of rewards to it, but it's not what we signed up for 30 years ago. But it's fun.
I do think we are over the big hump,
yeah.
And now we are at the point where we are regrouping and moving forward. I think another thing that's really important to me is I may have a horrible day, but I'm never out of alignment with my value set around the value of libraries in a democracy and the importance of it to the power of thought. I do think it makes a big difference in academic productivity, socialization, sending students forward who not only have a good grounding but also a good orientation. So I feel very good about that part of it.
And the people you work with are great. I mean, that's sort of where I get my enjoyments, working with a really wonderful group of colleagues and staff and people outside of the library that all want to make this a better place, and we may not agree on how to do that, but they're committed to that, and they're really, the people are what make the place.
And there was some poll recently that said librarians are the least stressful job out there.
But number one was college professor.
Was it college or was it librarian? Was it college professor?
No, librarian was number one, but college professor was. So that
least stressful.
Whole.
Okay. Yeah.
So. Good thing we're not stressed, huh?
Yeah.
Keeping a sense of humor around it is also really important, I think.
You're welcome.
Thanks for inviting us.
And rounding out this series.
Yep.
Okay.
Phew. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.